Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids.
Right there, a little classic Motley Crue, Too Young to Fall in Love off the Shout at the Devil record featuring Vince Neil, Tommy Lee, Mick Mars, and Nikki Sixx. But today, we're talking about a different version of that band. We're talking about the John Corabi era of Motley Crue. And to talk about that era of the band with me is the one and only Chris Aiken from the Classic Metal Show. Yeah, I know. It shouldn't still be controversial, but for some of you guys, it is. Listen, it's got to be like 2-3 years now. We're okay. We're cool with one another. I think it was like 2014. We kind of started to mend the fences. Maybe it was 13? No, I think it was 14, actually. But anyways, yeah, Chris and I are cool. I love this guy's books, his interviews that he does. And he's here to talk to us about his brand new book, which I actually did the book on tape version, you know, the audio version of it, which is great because you get to hear Chris read it. And you get a bonus John Crabby interview there at the end. There's also some stuff with Chris from Decibel Geek on there. So yeah, it's great stuff. So definitely either buy a copy of this book or get the audio downloads of it that Chris reads, because it's a fun listen. The book is called Cause and Effect, Motley Crue. That's a reference to the Motley Crue self-titled record. Yeah, so without any further ado, let's get into a song that I love. Chris Aiken maybe doesn't love it quite as much, but I love this song. And this is the big kind of single, the first single off of that self-titled Motley Crue record. This is Hooligan's Holiday, followed by my interview with Chris Aiken.
Get away!
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal and calling in, joining us once again from the Classic Metal Show and also the author of a number of great books, which we'll talk about, including this new one, Cause and Effect, Motley Crue. That's a reference to the self-titled album by Motley Crue, Mr. Chris Aiken. Chris, how are you?
Good, man. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. And I just finished earlier today this great book you read on one of my favorite bands. And, you know, I heard you say they're one of your favorite bands, right up there with Metallica. I would say they're definitely top three for me. I mean, I always just say my top two favorite bands were Motley Crue and Iron Maiden. And this book that you wrote is a great story, not only about the self-titled, the oddball Motley Crue record, the self-titled Motley Crue record with John Corabi on vocals, but it's also your story and how you relate to this record and what important parts it played in your life. So it's definitely a really cool read and listen. I actually listened to it. You do the narration, a book on tape or whatever you want to call it nowadays.
Sure.
Yeah. So good stuff. Yep. Talk a little bit about the Cause and Effect book series, because you've done at least two of these, maybe more.
I've done two.
Two. Okay.
Yeah. I've done two so far. I did the Metallica Black album and I did now Motley Crue. There's at least seven of them that I'm going to write in total.
Awesome.
The next one is going to be Judas Priest's Turbo. Nine Inch Nails, The Fragile is one of them. Megadeth's Risk album is one of them. There's quite a few of them. What I'm trying to do is, you know, everybody writes about the best album that a person did or that a person or a band did. Or, you know, they take easier topics. And I didn't want to write just about, oh, this was a great album and this launched this band. And, you know, then they played this festival and they hit their stride. What I want to do is tackle releases that changed something about an artist, whether it was changed how their fan base related to them or changed how, you know, music adapted. Like I'll use the Black Album book as an example. Before the Black Album, rock music, one, Metallica's fan base was completely different than after the Black Album.
Yeah.
So it changed the fan base. But at the same time, it also changed the way commercial rock was programmed on the radio. You know, I mean, before that Metallica record, there was just not a lot of really heavy music that was in the regular top 40. When people thought of metal, they thought of Motley Crue, Poison, and Warrant. They weren't thinking of Metallica and Slayer and Korn or Disturbed, you know, the ones that came after. And if you look at how commercial radio changed after the Black Album, you know, everything got a lot heavier while still becoming the mainstream. So that's what I'm trying to accomplish with the Motley Crue one, with Cause and Effect Motley Crue. No question, it changed their fan base. It changed the way they were perceived. It changed the way that they were dealt with MTV. And, you know, ultimately, as much as I love Motley Crue, I think that it's the last really good record that they did personally. I didn't like New Tattoo. I didn't like Generation Swine. And I didn't like Saints of Los Angeles, although that was somewhat better. You know, I just feel like their last hurrah was the one that they tried to put everything into because they were trying to sell it as the new invention of the band. And while it ultimately failed, it is by far my favorite release by the band.
Right. You know, the record in general, it was basically, I mean, they did Decade of Decadence in there. I think that was 91, but Dr. Feelgood, 89. So by the time the self-titled record came out, we're really looking at at least a 5-year gap in between those two studio records. Did that hurt them, besides the fact that the tides were changing in the music industry and fads were changing and they weren't in style anymore? Do you think that long break hurt them?
I think so, sure. But I think it's bigger than just the 5-year break, because as we've seen, you know, especially more recently than anything, a long break can help a band. Look at Guns N' Roses.
Right.
You know, while 13 years seemed endless, when they came back strong. And the reason was because the demand, you know, the demand for it regrew, the interest regrew. And so a break can help, but it wasn't as big of a break as you might think, because, you know, Vince Neil snuck a record in there as well. And when Vince snuck his record out in there, Vince kind of took the lead. And Vince sounded like the old Motley Crue. If you listen to Exposed, that sounds like a logical next step from the Dr. Feelgood release. And I don't know what you think of that record, but I think it's great. I think there's a lot of great songs on that record that, you know, were not really appreciated, but it was a very strong record from him. And then he was immediately out with Van Halen. So, you know, Vince at the beginning of his solo career after Motley Crue looked big. So in a sense, he looked the same as like David Lee Roth did with Eat 'Em and Smile.
Right.
With, you know, after Van Halen, it looked like he was just going to carry right on down the road. And when Motley Crue, go ahead.
No, but I was going to, you know, it is interesting because Exposed came out a full year before the self-titled, and you go into this mm-hmm. in the book. I mean, that was a great record. Steve Stevens, in a lot of ways, was the guitar hero that Motley Crue never really had, sure. which is something you also touch upon in the Cause and Effect Motley Crue book you wrote. And Vicky Fox was, he was almost a Tommy Lee clone on drums, and the album sounded right. like a Crue record much more so than the self-titled record, which would come a year later. I mean, why didn't Expose catch on among the Crue fans? I mean, we're still in the early 90s there. I don't know. That's mm-hmm. always been a head scratcher for me.
Me too. And it is strange that it didn't catch on, because the songs were good. I honestly, the only thing I could think of is that they didn't release the right singles. I mean, I thought Sister of Pain was a good single, but you know, I thought that they should have released like The Edge. You know, that was a really stronger song, and they went with what did they go with? Have Your Cake and Eat It Too, or right. something. Which was not the strongest song on the release for the second single. And, you know, just like any band, whenever there's a division, there's half of the people that just don't want to support it.
Right.
And I think that is what happened. Is Nikki Sixx, like him or hate him, he is a polarizing presence. And mm-hmm. when you're trying to do a record when you're associated with that guy, and all of a sudden you're not, and you're both talking smack about each other, you know, there's going to be a group of people that don't jump on board. But I'm with you. I never fully understood why. And what's interesting is, I don't think I covered it in the book, but if you really think about, you know, prior to that, you know, Vince had that first single out, I think 6 or 8 months before his album, from the Encino Man soundtrack with Invite a Bunch of Friends.
Yeah,
come.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, Vince had a clear edge. And he had the edge at the right timing event. You know, I mean, it would have been about 3 years from Dr. Feelgood, and he was on the charts again. So I don't fully understand why it didn't take off. I loved it. I went and saw him, you know, I'm a Hagar Van Halen guy, which I know makes me, you know,
right.
makes me not a Van Halen fan to a lot of people. But I went and saw that tour 3 or 4 times just because, to me, that was, for me and my fandom, that was a perfect bill to see Vince Neil opening for, you know, for Van Halen with Sammy Hagar. That was
yeah.
perfect. And it just didn't happen. And I don't know. What I think it did was it lowered the expectation of Motley fans somewhat, because they were seeing Vince that sounded like Motley Crue and they weren't digging it as much. So then when Motley Crue came behind it with something that didn't sound anything like what they were used to, they just didn't gravitate to it at all.
Right, right. And you, in the book, talk about seeing Motley Crue on the self-titled album tour. People who don't know the book aren't going to get this, but the crematorium, was the place really right. called the crematorium?
It was called Cremation Services Incorporated.
Wow.
And you did
dogs there and people?
Yeah. On Mondays that the Animal Protection League, you know, they would put down, you know, dogs that had been there too long or cats or whatever. And that was our Monday afternoon. We would take the carcasses out of the back of a pickup truck and just load them into the oven and burn them up. It was a gruesome job, to say the least.
Right. And you go into that in the book. Of course, the book is Cause and Effect, Motley Crue, a reference to the self-titled Motley Crue record, that oddball Motley Crue record, which featured John Corabi on vocals and guitar and big presence in the band. And let's talk about some of the songs off of that record. Misunderstood, one of your favorite, I think you said your favorite song off the record, right?
It is. It is definitely my favorite song on the record. It's just such a, it's not only a great song, but the writing is better than anything Nicky, in my opinion, anything Nicky ever put his pen to, and I love the different movements in it. I like the kind of somber, almost instrumental type of a beginning that leads into a blast and then it goes back mellow again.
Right.
I like the movement of that song. And, it's just one of those tunes that always grabbed me and I always thought was strong. The only thing that, and again, I always thought that could have been a good single, but I remember when they did it as a single, they chopped it all up and it sounded terrible. It was like really poorly edited. If you ever heard the 4-minute version of it versus the 6.5 that I think it is on the album, it's really not a good thing. And again, it was mistakes like that that I think cost Motley, greatly with that record. At least that's one of the reasons, one of many.
And that was the second single off the record. The first single, Hooligan's Holiday, which we can talk about in a minute, weren't quite as keen on that as some of the other songs on the record, but Misunderstood, too, it had that like synth string sound going, which to me was almost Beatlesque, subtly in the background there. And I don't know. I almost wonder, it made me listening to that song today, because I went back and listened to the record after I finished the book. It made me wonder if this record would have come out a couple years earlier, like, 92-ish, maybe even 91, when that whole kind of Beatles retro thing was really in full swing. I mean, I remember, Tears for Fear is a very different band, but, sowing in the seeds of love. And there was so much Beatles influence. Do you think the album, the self-titled Motley Crue record, could have maybe done better if it were released, say, a couple years earlier?
Maybe. It's a hard thing to, I think what would have helped them greatly is if they wouldn't have waited to introduce Corabi and release music at the same time. It was too much of a hard, if you think about it, if I remember correctly, I'm doing this straight out of memory without any Wikipedia or any of that, but if I remember right, they announced Corabi the same time that they announced Hooligan's Holiday and released the video.
Right.
And so people were like, who's this guy? This doesn't sound like Motley Crue. I know I said it in the book that the video made the band that was once gigantic. The last we saw of them was same old situation where they're passing the ball around a stadium. And then they go from that to being in this little box with this weird video and, the singer doesn't sound anything like what Motley Crue sounds like. And most people didn't know his name. They didn't know John Corabi from The Scream. They didn't know John Corabi from anything.
Right.
So it was probably just too much shift. I think if they would have laid it out better, to be honest, like Anthrax did with John Bush. Now, admittedly, John Bush was more well known at the time, but they announced John Bush. And people started speculating what it would sound like. Would it sound like Joey, or would it sound like Armored Saint, or would it be a mishmash? So that when they finally came out with Sound of White Noise, people had at least something in their head to compare the expectation to. Where with Motley 94, you went from zero to hero, and those people that were looking for the next Home Sweet Home or Looks to Kill or whatever, or Dr. Feelgood, they did not get delivered what they were expecting, and they just didn't like it. I don't personally know that it could have ever had big success with the name Motley Crue on the cover.
Right.
I think if they would have called it something else, Corabi Crue or something, just like the Van Halen thing, I think Van Halen would have probably been even bigger if they would have called it Van Hagar. Just gone with it. That's what everybody ended up calling it anyway, and I think it would have played better for them, reputation-wise. I think the same with this record. I think if they would have called it something else, it would have done better. I think long-term it would have done better. At least you would have had a band that could have sustained. Instead, what you got was a record that failed, a record company that gave up on them, and they went scurrying back to the guy that they didn't really want to work with and put out a record right behind it that was garbage.
Right. Generation Swine, of course. You know, and you mention you mentioned in the book about this thing, which I'd forgotten about, and it made me wonder how much it actually hurt them at a time where they really needed the support of a big corporate, you know, outlet like MTV. There was this interview, and I can't remember the details of exactly what happened, but where they got pissed off and they walked out on this MTV interview, which probably ended up pissing MTV off, and in you know, we can imagine it probably meant that MTV wasn't going to support it because they were being dicks to MTV. I mean, that seems to me like that could have been a real dumb move, you know, as far as something that could have really helped this record was support of MTV.
Sure. Oh, I think so too, because I fully believe that whatever MTV got behind, if you remember, and I know you remember this obviously, but if people remember, if MTV was backing it, it was platinum.
Right. Just,
that was a rule from the time that, you know, I mean, bad bands at the beginning of the MTV era. Flock of Seagulls. Mm-hmm. I know some people like them. I like Iran as much as the next guy does.
Yeah.
Flock of Seagulls overall was a bad band.
Right. I couldn't tell you one other song.
Album off of,
yeah.
Well, no one can. Or Men Without Hats. That's
right.
Another bad band with one song. And those albums were at least gold selling because MTV was pushing it. You know, if MTV hadn't gotten behind Smells Like Teen Spirit, I doubt that we would know Nirvana. You know, I just don't think we would have. The radio wouldn't. Radio was constantly following MTV's lead almost from the day that, from the day that Michael Jackson put Thriller out there. When Michael Jackson did Thriller and it was an MTV smash before it was a radio smash, that was it. Radio followed their cue. And for Motley, for Nicky, and it was a Nicky thing if I remember right, was Nicky got pissed off that he was if I remember right, it was something about them being lumped in with Poison.
Right.
And Nicky has never liked being compared to Poison in any way, shape, or form. He said something to the interviewer and the interviewer went back at him and he walked off.
Wow.
And it's funny because I've talked to Karabi about it, and Karabi, if you ever ask him, he'll tell you, he's like, that's the exact moment my career died.
Wow.
Because he said he knew at that moment that it was over because they weren't going to get MTV love after shitting on MTV. And sure enough, they didn't. I mean, how many people, I don't know, do you even remember the video for Hooligans or for Misunderstood?
I watched it recently because I was reading your book, and I vaguely remembered them, you know, sitting on a porch, like maybe I'd seen it once before in my life, you know, but no. I mean, Hooligans Holiday, I definitely remember that video, but Misunderstood,
because it had a big push before. Yeah, Misunderstood, and I didn't even know until like the last 3 or 4 months when I was doing some of the research on this book, there was a video for Smoke the Sky.
Wow.
I had no idea at all until it's on Vivo. You know, if you go to Vivo channel, you can find Motley Crue Smoke the Sky. I had no idea until 2017, which just tells you that MTV completely quit on that band.
Totally, totally. And you saw them on that tour. You were working at the place we mentioned earlier, the crematorium. But you saw them on that tour. So, and you weren't, as much as you liked the self-titled record, you weren't real impressed by the show that you saw. What was wrong with the show? What bugged you about it?
It was, as much as John Karabi is one of those vocalists that could sing anything and I'll listen to it. And I mean that. I mean, I love Dead Daisies. I love the Union records. I love his Crue record. I love his acoustic record. You know, even some of his bad Cleopatra covers that he's done with, you know, Cassia Organ playing the keyboards for him in the background, I still kind of dig because it's Karabi. I'm a big honk for John Karabi. But seeing him singing the Vince songs did not work. It just, even songs that I loved, you know, Home Sweet Home, which I know he's covered since. I don't like that cover that much either. But it just didn't work. It was, his voice did not fit those songs. And half of the show or more was those songs, which it has to be because it says Motley Crue. You know, I mean, how can Motley Crue go and not play Dr. Feelgood or not play Home Sweet Home or, you know, or some of those songs? I mean, they have to play those songs. And, you know, and again, I hate to compare to other bands, but I'm sure you probably saw at least one Sammy Hagar Van Halen show.
Oh, yeah,
and
definitely.
And hearing Sammy sing Ain't Talking About Love always was like, all right, time to hit the car.
Right.
You know, it's time to leave because it just was, or Jump or Panama or whatever. It's like, this isn't the guy. This is bad karaoke. And yeah, I was not overwhelmed by it. As like, I'll be honest, I saw Karabi do the Motley 94 album a few years ago, and that was far superior to the show that I saw with Motley Crue, you know, being Motley Crue back in 90, whatever that would have been, 94.
Right. Right. Again, we're talking with Chris Akin, the author of Cause and Effect, Motley Crue. Great, great read, great listen. Chris, where can people pick this up? Is it out yet? It's about to come out, right?
It comes out on Black Friday officially.
Okay.
It'll be everywhere. It'll be at Amazon and Barnes and Noble and anywhere that people buy books.
Cool.
It's right now, if people want to pre-order it and get it autographed, because, you know, my autograph is worth something. But you know, if they do want that, they can get it over at chrisakinbooks.com. And as far as the audio goes, they can pre-order the audio now, and I'm basically sending it as soon as people pre-order it. And if they wait, I'm going to be... I signed a deal, which is pretty interesting because I really struggled to do the audio piece. But I signed a deal with this company that really liked the audio piece, so they are releasing it, and I'm not sure exactly where it's going to be released yet other than Amazon, but it is the audio is going to be, from what I'm told, is going to be available everywhere that people buy audiobooks these days. So I guess that would be Amazon again, and
maybe like Audible
iTunes
or something.
Yeah, Audible. It is going to be on Audible. A lot of anywhere that you do like book subscriptions to, it will be available. Is that like Deezer or stuff like that? So I'm a little clueless on that one myself. You know, they haven't filled me in on everything with that, but the audio, you know, if people like books, but don't want to, I think it's a quick, short read anyway. It's not a huge book, but the audio is, I don't know. I thought the audio was fun with, you know, the bonus, the little bit of bonus stuff that I did, an interview with Karabi and you know, a little Q&A with Chris Sinzak from the Decibel Geek podcast, because he's a big fan of that record too. So if you want a little bit of extra, you get an extra like 2 hours of stuff with the audiobook, and that will be coming as well soon at all the places that you would normally look.
Cool. Awesome. And again, Cause and Effect, Motley Crue. It sounds like there's more Cause and Effect books coming out. You mentioned The Fragile by Nine Inch Nails. Love that record. When's that coming?
That is probably 19, I would imagine. The next one is about half written already, which is Judas Priest Turbo.
Oh, cool.
You know, and as you're well aware, people either love it or they hate it, and there's really no middle ground on that record at all. It's, you know, I had my choice. Judas Priest is probably, if I was listing my bands in order, it would be Pantera, Metallica, Judas Priest. They're like one of my all-time favorites. But fortunately, they gave me plenty to actually choose from between Nostradamus and Turbo. But I thought Turbo was just a little bit more of a good one to go to, because it did change their fan base. And at the same time, it also found them really change their sound. You know, it's where they really tried to be a hair band instead of a metal band. And it's kind of, you know, there's some weird songs on that one too. So
there is,
that's
but
the next one.
You know, that title track, I will say that title track, Turbo, whenever I see them in more recent times, I mean, the place always goes nuts for that song when they play it live.
Sure.
And that song, at least, I mean, I used to like that record. I like Locked Up. I'm trying to think what else was on there. Was
Personal Property. Hands Off, Private Property.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to that.
That'll be a good one. I'm loving doing the writing, and I have a book about my adventures in Korea, which is the next one I hope to get out. That's not going to be for the faint of heart. That's a pretty filthy, dirty book. But after that one comes the Judas Priest one, and then Nine Inch Nails of Fragile is after that. Risk is after that, and quite a few still coming. So plenty more writing out of my head, I guess.
Cool. And guys, Chris, of course, is on the Classic Metal Show every Saturday night and on iTunes and all your normal podcasting outlets. And to recap the books, yep. Cause and Effect, the Black Album, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cause and Effect, Motley Crue, the self-titled.
Correct.
Little mm-hmm. Victories and They Call Me Chris.
Those are the four.
And all on, what was the book website? Aiken Books? Chris Aiken
it's
Books.
Chris Aiken Books. Yep, chrisaikenbooks.com.
Cool. We'll have that link through today's show notes. And yeah, as always, Chris, good talking with you tonight.
Excellent, man. I always appreciate the time. Even though we're supposed to hate each other, this is more fun, isn't it?
No, this is a great conversation. Yeah. Yeah. It's been a few years since the hate. So, and I'm glad we're past that. Definitely. Definitely. Cool.
Yeah, me too.
But really enjoyed the book, sincerely. Cause and Effect. I've enjoyed all the books, actually. So definitely, guys, check out Cause and Effect, Motley Crue. The one thing that's cool about it, too, if you do know Chris from his Classic Metal Show radio show and the previous books, Little Victories and Call Me Chris, I feel like this is a good companion to all that stuff, because not only is there great facts and stuff about this record, but unlike, say, like a Martin Popoff book, which is just facts about the record, you get Chris's personality and his own personal stories coming through about how the record got him through certain things and just little Chris Aiken adventures that go on with this record in your life. So it's good stuff.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Life's passed him by. Little old woman, scared and blind, left alone in desperate times. Life's passed her by. Oh, life is misunderstood. Understood, yeah. Life's not always fair, or so they say.
Misunderstood by Motley Crue, off the self-titled record featuring John Corabi, Mick Mars, Nikki Sixx, and Tommy Lee. Yeah, so there you go. Big thanks to Chris for joining me. Go purchase his book. We'll have it up in the show notes on Talking Metal for today's episode. Support what Chris does with his books. He's doing some great stuff. Definitely the Metallica book I read too. That was a great read, and I'm looking forward to future books, Cause and Effect books by Chris Aiken. Chris, thanks for joining us, and thanks to you guys for listening. Please support us. We got the Patreon thing happening now. You can join me there. We got the Amazon links, the PayPal donation. Leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Follow me on Twitter. Come join me on Facebook. And check out our new site, which is coming very soon, talkingrock.net. Talkingmetal.com will still be around, but talkingrock.net is a new venture, which I'm going to try to make a go of. So I'd love for you to support me there. Follow me on Twitter. It's at Strigl, Strigl, or at Talking Metal. All right, guys, I'm on Instagram too and Snapchat. I'm everywhere, everywhere. You can't get away from me. Anyways, here's some more classic Motley Crue. We're going way back to the first album on this. This is Public Enemy number 1.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.